It's fine. He twisted out of my grip. Cooking sucks. But seriously, is this really your new house? I got the pictures, but... Yeah, this is it. Come on.
I led him toward the front door as Sebastian and Niev reached her house. She ran in to get something, and he turned to look at us, his gaze tracking me and Jimmy. I waved my hand, throwing up a magical one-way mirror, making it so nothing impeded my view of Sebastian, but he saw his own reflection instead of us.
"Well, hello, Master Evans,"
Mr. Tom bowed, his wings fluttering. Magic sparkled along my spell, and it took me a moment to realize Sebastian's fingers had lifted from his sides, his spell work hardly noticeable. His magic and power filled in little spots and crevices in my spell that I hadn't even realized were there, strengthening it, but also changing it, enhancing it. I paused as Jimmy reached out to fist bump Mr. Tom, turning back to see Sebastian's handiwork. The image of Sebastian crystallized, like I was looking at a computer screen, the shadows of early evening now tinged lime green. He'd added a nighttime effect in addition to cleaning up the haze from my spell. "Just a sec," I murmured, jogging out to the street. I couldn't pass up the chance to look at it from the other side. I punched a hole through the spell so I could cross the threshold, the world snapping back to its normal appearance. Once I crossed through, the hole winked out, the spell weaving itself back together.
"Wow."
Sebastian narrowed his eyes at the spot I'd jogged through.
"That's incredibly advanced, being able to walk through a spell like this without tearing it down. Not many in the world would be able to do it. I didn't expect it with the rudimentary spell you directed."
"Let's just quiet things down," I made a sign of pushing down the air. "Not everyone knows I'm magical around here." He frowned.
"That's your son, though, right? He looks like you."
I didn't comment. Apparently, I didn't need to.
"How can you have this much magic without him knowing about it, without him having some too?"
he asked. "Niev will explain my situation. Keep your voice down, if you would." I marveled at the way he'd changed the spell. His sight was no longer a mirror. I could see Ivy House, only Jimmy's car wasn't parked in the driveway, and there was no sign of anyone in the doorway of the house. It looked as though Jimmy hadn't come at all and we'd all gone inside. "The work you did on that spell is amazing. How can you fix someone else's spell?" He scratched his head, making another patch of hair stand on end.
"I have a lot of power, and figuring out spells and duplicating them is kind of a hobby of mine. Patching up or fixing spells that have already been realized is in my wheelhouse."
"Can a lot of mages do that?"
"No. That's why I get paid so well, and why whatever this is probably won't work out. I mean, from the summons I got the sense I'm supposed to train you or something, but..."
He shrugged.
"Like I said, I have a job."
"If it is just the money you're worried about, that's no problem." I blew out a breath, really wishing I could have him walk me through how he'd fixed my spell. Jimmy was waiting, though. "Listen, will you just hang around this evening long enough for me to meet up with you? After I get my house guests settled, I'll head around to the bar. Please?" Niev stepped out of her house as the man's gaze rooted to mine, reading me, or maybe reading the situation.
"Okay."
He shrugged, still seeming so uninterested, aloof.
"I took a week off anyway, so I don't have to hurry back."
I had a week to determine if I could trust him, a week to win him to my side. The fact that he'd created a potion that hid him from Ivy House without making him glow like he was radioactive was eyebrow-raising, because even Elliot Graves, one of the most powerful mages in the world, hadn't pulled that off. But transforming my spell into something infinitely better? This guy could be my salvation. Austin could drag out my magic, Edgar could point me in the right direction, and this guy could help me hone my craft. I couldn't help smiling at the thought. "I'll connect with you later. Get some food or whatever you want. I'll see you." As Niev stepped down to him, I waved and jogged back to the house. I punched a hole in the spell and saw everyone still on the porch, Jasper and Ulrich included. Edgar had joined them. I really hoped it worked out with Sebastian. He'd give me the edge I needed to survive this crazy magical world. an edge I'd likely need once his obviously rich and probably high-powered boss found out I'd stolen his star employee. Chapter 5.
The cape is dope, bro.
Jimmy was sitting at the kitchen island, eating an apple while Mr. Tom made him sandwiches. He'd gravitated straight toward the kitchen.
Sometimes you just gotta let your freak flag fly. At your age, you've earned it.
Yes, fantastic. Thank you for the vote of confidence,
Mr. Tom said dryly. It isn't a cape, I said. My stomach twisted as I stood at the corner of the island. I'd decided before Jimmy had gotten here that I'd immediately tell him about the magic. There was no point in the house playing mind games with him like it had with my parents, or with me trying to hide the nature of the mage that had just shown up at my door. I'd have to tell Jimmy about the magic eventually. My parents had proven that. So I might as well do it while he was tired from his already long day. He'd be less inclined to want to leave. I hoped he didn't assume I'd gone crazy and immediately run for the door. They are wings, I said. In his other form, they are wings, and when he's in this form, his human form, they look like that, like a cape. There were probably better ways to break it to him, though. Jimmy snorted.
Like a gargoyle?
Mr. Tom twisted to look back at him. He didn't say a word as he returned his focus to the sandwiches, leaving this to me. What do you know about gargoyles? I leaned over the island.
Remember that old cartoon? And come on.
He rolled his eyes.
How many movies have gargoyles with a cape that's supposed to be their wings? I've seen it in anime, too. You'd think someone would have an original thought. I mean, no offense, bro. If you're going to do cosplay, you kind of got to go with what's established, right?
Only in the realm of make-believe does one require original thoughts.
Mr. Tom set a plate down on the island, the porcelain clinking.
Would you like some chips, tea?
Do you have Coke?
Jimmy asked.
Yes, sadly. It will rot your teeth, but I did pick some up.
Mr. Tom turned toward the fridge. I clasped my hands as Jimmy took a much too large bite of the sandwich, filling his cheeks to the extent that he could barely close his mouth. He'd relaxed a few of his manners at college, that was clear.
So, there've been some changes with me, I started. It all started with this house.
I know.
He struggled to swallow before taking a sip of the freshly opened can of Coke to wash it down.
You look really good, Mom. You finally had time to exercise and stuff, huh? You always wanted to get in shape.
I wanted to be in shape, not get in shape, but no. This house
is rad. It's creepy as hell.
He bopped his head as he looked around.
It's huge.
I'll leave you to it.
Mr. Tom finished washing up.
I assume I will stay behind to watch the young master when you visit the bar.
Jimmy's eyes rounded, but he didn't comment. There was no telling what, precisely, he was reacting to. Yes, if you don't mind. The others are already there, not to mention Austin. Anger flash-boiled my blood. I pushed it aside. I'll have plenty of cover.
Of course.
Mr. Tom walked from the room with a straight back, raised nose, and grossly overdone stuffy English butler vibe. He did like to put on a show.
You have your own butler?
Jimmy asked with a grin, his right cheek puffed out with food.
That is so fucking awesome.
I frowned at him. When you are in this house, you will not curse. Have respect for me and your surroundings.
Sorry,
he mumbled and finished off the first sandwich. I do have a butler of sorts, yes. He kinda came with the house. He was employed here when I came. So was the gardener.
Yeah, you have a huge yard.
He shook his head.
Dad's house is big, but it doesn't even compare to this one. He lives in a ritzy spot, but he certainly doesn't have the money for a butler.
You went to his house first? I tried not to let the disappointment show on my face. It was petty, but some things couldn't be helped.
Yeah, I thought you knew. He kept pushing and pushing and all the guilt trips.
He sighed,
picking up the second sandwich.
Same old dad. He hasn't relaxed with a new setup.
So then, why are you early? I wasn't expecting you for another day.
I could not handle Camilla for one more second. She's too nice. She was always around, smiling and chatting and wanting to get to know me.
He shivered.
Dad was working like he always does, so it was mostly just me and her. I mean, she's great, don't get me wrong, but...
He shook his head and then took a bite. So, how long are you here? I thought you were going to leave from here to go to there.
The week, if that's okay. I fly out on Monday, after Easter.
I smiled and quickly walked around to wrap my arms around his shoulders and squeeze him. Of course, we have plenty of room. But I sat at a stool next to him. Like I was saying, there have been some changes.
You found someone new?
What? No, not that. You see, I didn't actually pay for this house. It kind of chose me. His eyes narrowed, not out of suspicion, but like he was trying really hard to get my words to make more sense. Gargoyles are actually real, I said. Magic is real. I didn't believe it at first, but, well.
Are you on meds? Is it for the depression? Dad said you were depressed.
My eyebrows crawled up my forehead and a new flash of anger blistered through me. Your father never bothered... I pushed away the desire to talk smack, taking a deep breath. I'm not depressed, no. I'm actually happier now than I've ever been. But the world as you know it isn't actually the whole story. I twisted my lips to the side, thinking, right, okay, finish up, I'll show you. I didn't actually believe any of it until I saw proof.
What kind of proof?
You'll see.
Miss, are you sure this is the best idea?
Mr. Tom stood in the large entryway, awaiting further instruction.
The game box is all queued up with his favorite game. Wouldn't he rather do that? Remember how your parents reacted?
Edgar stood beside Mr. Tom with a supportive smile. He had no problem showing his supernatural abilities to a non-magical person. This is the only way, Mr. Tom, or Ivy House will just rattle him. You know she will. I pointed up at the panel arching above the entryway, bridging the gap between large curving staircases. A lovely tableau of a meadow was etched into the wood, spring flowers covering the rolling hillside.
Mom, you're starting to make me nervous,
Jimmy said softly, and my heart squished because it was clear he was worried about me. He cared.
You're stealing all of my fun,
Ivy House said to me in our magical way of speaking.
I wanted to see if I could make him wonder if he was going crazy like your father.
Which is exactly why I am telling him now, I replied. I want him to be happy here, to be comfortable. I want him to come back. The house was quiet for a beat.
10-4.
An affirmative. The flowers engraved on the panel swayed as if caught in a gust of wind, the carving so lifelike that I could almost smell the floral aroma. I found myself assigning colors to them, buttery yellow specked with loud fuchsia, violet dotting the way. A memory stirred, of sitting on a rock shelf above such a meadow, a similar array of flowers stretching away into the soft afternoon sun. Austin had sat beside me, easy and comfortable, a feast of meats and fruits and cheeses displayed in front of us, a crate of wine to one side. He'd given me the perfect date, as he'd set out to do.
You're choosing his side, I said to Ivy House.
Usually her wooden carvings were of battle and death and heads on spikes, or, if she was feeling less vicious, magical creatures in fantastical situations. She'd never displayed such a pretty, mundane scene. She always, however, liked to poke the bear and create images that would mess with me in some way.
Yes.
Understanding dawned. You knew this was going on, and you didn't mention it.
Obviously, I've been dormant for much too long. All of the guardians have. I need you alive, and the magical link gives them the ability to keep you safe. This was always in your best interest. Any magical person would have known that.
Which I've acknowledged. My arrangement with Austin was a bit different, though. I trusted him to be honest, and he purposely deceived me. I have every right to be pissed.
By all means, kick his head in. Just don't kill him. I need him. He's the best chance you have at long-term survival. Above all others, above the mage that came earlier today, Austin is the man that I need the most, that you need. So give him hell, but let him explain. Unless his explanation is bad, then let him use his mouth in other ways that will be much more enjoyable than talking.
I frowned at her. She was entirely too focused on getting me laid. I will get to the root of that link so I can control it from my end.
I don't doubt you. Ultimately, that power is yours above mine, above theirs. If you'd just put your big girl pants on and do the blood oath, you'd realize that the links you share are as much for them as they are for you. If they are ever in trouble, you will need those links to find them, to save them. You are a team, and you are stronger together.
I don't need to give blood to want to save my crew if they are in trouble. That's a given.
Then why are you so hesitant to take the oath?
A wave of unease washed through me, the price tag of forever weighing on me heavily. When Ivy House started making chicken sounds,
bark, bark, bark,
I cut off the communication. She could be insufferable. Reemerging into reality, I realized Edgar was talking, and likely had been the whole time I was communicating with the house.
Yes, a real vampire. I'm one of the oldest alive.
He smiled, his canines long and gruesome.
Usually, when a vampire is turned out of their clan for being too old, they are hunted for sport and killed for fun. I found Ivy House, though. They don't think I'm great sport for some reason.
Probably because you keep asking to be retired,
Mr. Tom said.
It's no fun when the prey asks for it.
Retired meant killed permanently. Every time Edgar made a mistake, which was pretty often, he insisted that I kill him. It would have been a running joke if he didn't actually mean it.
What was in that soda?
Jimmy asked softly.
I feel like I'm on acid or something.
He rubbed his eyes, watching the wooden tableau move and shift, less like wooden carvings and more like a TV screen.
Shall we?
Mr. Tom put his fingers on the buttons of his jacket, awaiting my directions.
I want to bring in Master Jimmy's things and get his room set up.
Just call him Jimmy, Mr. Tom. And yes, that's fine. Edgar? I motioned for him. Edgar puffed into a swarm of insects.
Holy!
Jimmy staggered backward.
What just happened? Seriously, was there something in that soda? Did I take an edible and not know it?
So my son had tried edibles and hallucinogens. That was something I could have gone my whole life happily not knowing. After a deep breath, I motioned for Mr. Tom to hurry up. A hidden door popped open down the way, Ivy House wanting to show off her stuff as well.
No, no. Why is he dropping trow?
Jimmy asked, backed against the door. Hold off, I told Ivy House. Let's give him a second to adjust. Show him the hidden tunnels and whatever else after he's gotten used to the idea. He'll like it better by then. The hidden door down the way clicked shut again. For once, she agreed with me. The sound of boulders moving and scraping against each other filled the space. Mr. Tom, in his birthday suit, bent slowly, his skin mottling from pasty white to a deep coal as it hardened into a tough hide. His wings rose behind his back, taking shape and stretching out before he pulled them back in, something he could do even while changing forms. Large teeth protruded from his pronounced jaw, and his ears rose to points within his growing black hair.
What in the...
Jimmy's breath went out of him. His mouth hung open, and his wide eyes took in the slow transformation from man to gargoyle. For a moment, Mr. Tom crouched on the floor, utterly still, hard stone. Then he straightened to his full height of nearly 8 feet, propelled into action by my need for him to show his gargoyle form. Otherwise, if I didn't have the need, he would stay stone until naturally emerging, the time that took dependent on his age. Given Mr. Tom's age, that would take a very long time.
He looks like the gargoyles from the cartoon, Jimmy whispered. Am I really seeing this?
Am I tripping?
It's magic. I held out my hand, palm up. A foot from my skin, a collection of sparks popped and fizzed.
Edgar, change back.
The swarm of insects changed back into the stooped vampire with long fingers and nails and pronounced canines. My magic came from the house, but magic exists all through the world. They are proof. I magically extinguished the sparks and lowered my hand. I didn't believe all this either at first. Someone I know turned into a large rat in front of me.
A shapeshifter,
Jimmy murmured.
That's right.
They usually turn into predators,
he said through a slack jaw.
I've never heard of a rat shifter.
Who wants to write a story about a shape-shifting rat, you know?
Edgar chuckled.
But vampires do drink blood, so you had that right. See? You were already looking for magic in your reading. Now you found it.
Jimmy looked at me with dazed eyes, completely gobsmacked, his mind in overdrive and ready to shut down. The scene of a winery tasting room appeared in the wood on the archway, and I narrowed my eyes at it. Austin had told me about magic at a wine tasting. My mind had been in overdrive, too. It had tried to shut down. Austin had been there to help me through it. He'd essentially held my hand, kept me level. He'd guarded my back while I learned about a whole new world. When Ivy House picked sides, she really rubbed it in.
Chapter 6
Magical people crowded in the bar, unusually packed for a Sunday night. Austin pulled out two beers and flipped the caps off before setting them down in front of two women in their mid-twenties with roaming eyes and simpering smiles.
$10.
He knocked on the bar and moved on, knowing Paul or Donna would follow along behind him and grab the payment. Austin wasn't so much a bartender as the owner and peacekeeper. Tending bar helped him keep an eye on things without having to mingle within the crowd.
Austin Steele!
Down the bar, Niev raised her empty glass, seated between one of the support beams and a guy in his early 30s with pale eyes. Niev still refused to call Austin Alpha. If it had been anyone else, he might have pushed the issue and asked for the respect he was due. But he knew it was her way of honoring Jess, of showing her pride in the Ivy House mistress, and maybe making a subtle statement that she thought Jess was the mightier of the two. The sentiment probably should have enraged him, but it warmed him instead. Austin refilled the ice in Niev's cup, placed a bottle of cider in front of her, and then braced his hands against the edge of the bar in front of the mage, meeting that flat, watchful stare.
If you're going to park here, you have to buy a drink,
he said, which wasn't even remotely true. This mage was here on business waiting for Jess. He could sit at the bar all night if he wanted to. Normally, Austin would make sure he wasn't disturbed while he did it. But something about the mage's cool demeanor set him on edge. Austin was typically an excellent judge of character, but he couldn't get an accurate read on this guy. He was dangerous, that was clear. The tang of his power, recently used, tweaked Austin's nose. He didn't show the usual swagger or overblown ego of high-powered mages, of high-powered anyone, but he had the power to back it up. What really set Austin on edge, though, was the way the mage had been watching his every move, every interaction. He didn't glance away when Austin caught him or lower his gaze in response to the look. There was no hostility, but there was also no fear. This guy either had incredible confidence or he had never dealt with an alpha shifter. Austin certainly hadn't dealt with a magical person like this mage. Then again, he wasn't exactly worldly when it came to powerful mages. Shifters and mages didn't usually mix.
Scotch on the rocks,
the man said.
That's on Ivy House.
Niev poured her cider over the ice cubes.
Any particular brand?
Austin asked as Donna bustled by behind him.
Glenfiddich, please.
Austin held the man's stare for a beat, but he didn't sense a challenge. He wondered if the mage was simply inquisitive, like a child examining a colorful bug that he didn't realize was poisonous. Whatever his purpose, the mage was treading a fine line. The staring had a time limit,
and it was fast approaching. Austin felt Jess winding her way closer to the bar. She'd started the trip by herself, but Jasper, who'd been outside the bar, blending into the stone facade, had peeled away in his gargoyle form and flown to meet her. In the beginning, Austin had only really felt a magical connection with Jess, but he could now keep tabs on the whole crew, something that helped him gauge Jess's level of safety. Her anger earlier in the day, for example, had been met with Jasper's confusion and wariness instead of alarm. Whatever she had reacted to, it wasn't a potential threat. Austin set the glass down in front of the mage, meeting his gaze again. Increasing the weight of his stare, pouring power into it, Austin tried to force a reaction.
"Thank you,"
the mage said, but didn't reach for the glass. He didn't look away. No spike of adrenaline came, no hint of challenge, no fear, no expression at all. Nothing. This mage was an enigma, and in Austin's experience, enigmas were dangerous. Niev watched Austin steal as he walked away to help someone else, his eyes lingering on the stranger as he moved away. That was odd. It seemed like the Alpha couldn't figure out what to make of their new friend, and neither could she, truth be told. She'd yet to meet anyone else who could hold eye contact with Austin Steele like that, besides Jesse. She grunted and took a sip of her cider.
"What do you think of the town?" she asked.
"It's..."
The mage took a sip of his drink, watching Austin Steele go about his business.
"This territory should be in its infancy, right? Isn't he a new Alpha?"
"Yeah, what of it?"
He shook his head.
"Looks like he's been running this town all his life."
"He's basically been running it since he got here, just without the title."
She felt Jesse winding closer and wrestled a delighted smile off her lips. Niev hadn't told Austin Steele why Jesse was so pissed off earlier. It would be a wonderful and probably extremely violent surprise.
"I don't know anything about shifter territories other than what I've read, but this place seems like a well-run magical town."
"Well-run! Do you hear him?"
she exclaimed.
"Who?"
He clearly wasn't familiar with that turn of phrase.
"The new people have made a right bags of this town."
"A right what?"
"It's a feckin' shit show, so it is. Pure chaos. There are lads running all over the place with their willies in their hands looking to fight. It's madness. Well,"
she took a sip of her drink,
"it's fun, don't get me wrong. It's like a game of whack-a-mole. But you have to play behind Austin Steele's back or things get ugly. When I'm in a mood, I can always find someone to pound on. It's great, crack."
"He seems to back people down with just a look."
"Yeah, take the hint."
She was met with silence. Clearly, this mage was way out of his league when it came to shifters. That would work out badly for him if he stayed in O'Brien's.
"When he's staring at you," she said, "he's promising to put you in your place if you don't mind your manners. He's being nice to you right now because of Jesse. It's the only reason he's ever nice. Otherwise, he's a fair but hard-hearted old bastard, so he is. Good man, but as dangerous as they come."
"So staring is considered a challenge?"
"You're not going to last long in this place, boyo, unless you cop on."
He stared at the side of her head.
"I'll assume that is a yes. So if he takes it as a challenge, what happens next?"
"Jesus, Mary and Joseph, you get to clatter, that's what happens. You try to see out your ear after he thumps you. Look."
She turned a little so she could better see him.
"Here's a word of advice. If you want to try your hand against a shifter, and I don't blame you if you do, pick someone else, anyone else. Don't start with him. Don't even end with him. He was born an Alpha, and now he's actually trying a little. It won't be long before he tries a lot and claims the reputation he deserves. For Jessie's sake, stay away from him. She needs help, and you can't do that if Austin Steele rips you in half."
"All due respect, you aren't born an Alpha any more than you're born a mage. You are merely born with talent. It's up to the individual to hone and shape that talent into a skill set."
"What are you, a philosopher?"
"When I have nothing better to do, yes, I suppose so."
She grunted again, so much for idle chit-chat.
What made him try a little, if I might inquire?
The mage asked. She took a sip, debating how much information to share about the area and the people running it. Austin Steele might not know what to make of the mage, but he didn't seem to consider him a threat. Yev never really tried to assess anyone, assuming everyone was an arsehole, but she had to admit that the mage didn't annoy her. He wasn't pushy, he wasn't too chatty, he drank when pushed, and a drink to be proud of at that, and he just minded his own business when no one engaged him. He did have a staring problem, though. He was as bad as the horny girls that filled this place, watching Austin Steele's every move, hoping to go home with him. Only this guy wasn't looking at Austin Steele's arms, back, or butt. He was paying attention to the way he handled people, taking in what the Alpha noticed and reacted to. That should have probably set off warning bells. It didn't.
"Are you using magic to alter the moods of the people around you?" she asked.
It was her turn to get analyzed.
"You don't seem overly put out about the possibility."
She shrugged. "You're not annoying me. If it takes magic to make that a reality, then I'm not beat up about it."
A crooked grin worked at his lips, as though a novice puppet master were maneuvering his mouth.
"What a strange place this town is. You aren't afraid of magic controlling you?"
It wasn't a question.
"Not afraid, no. Though that kind of thing can make a body irrational."
"Meaning?"
"If you were, and I'd had enough, I'd kill you."
"I would expect no less. In answer to your question, no, I'm not using magic to control you. I'm using it to eavesdrop around the room, but since I can hear you just fine, the spell isn't near you."
"Oh, yeah?"
She glanced and met those flat gray eyes, his face utterly expressionless except for that strange smile.
"Hear anything good?"
"A great many ladies would like to bed the Alpha."
"You don't need magic to know that."
"Well, I do. I'm not very good at reading social cues or understanding human behavior. I'm slightly socially awkward, we'll say. Socially deficient, maybe."
"Jesse will be glad to hear it. What else?"
"A group in the back doesn't like the way the Alpha is scheduling supervised fights to handle pack placement, nor do they like the way he throws his weight around."
Nev sniffed.
"They don't like their own inferiority."
"Sounds like one of them's an Alpha from another pack. I can't be sure, but..."
"Ah," she nodded. "A mediocre Alpha and his best and brightest. They're more interested in fighting for dominance than in joining the pack, the maggots. Some Alphas cannot stand the idea of someone being tougher or more powerful than they are. They likely take Austin Steele's newness to the post as a sign of weakness." She grinned. "That'll be some show. I hope they challenge him tonight."
"You want them to do it?"
"Oh, yeah. When Austin Steele gets going, it really gets the blood pumping. I like watching, when it's got nothing to do with me, of course."
"I see."
"Nah, you don't. Shifters are a different breed. Though all creatures have their issues. Gargoyles are some lot, I'll tell you. Only thing good about them is they are mostly quiet. Except for the thorn in me arse, Mr. Tom."
"I've tried to read up on them. Shifters, I mean. I've always been fascinated by the rift between mages and shifters, you see. And I think... I mean, I don't know. But after seeing some of the shifters in here, I think mages must be scared of shifters. I'm scared, at least. That must be the root of the prejudice. Magic like mine does not require strength. Magic does not require courage. We are cowards, most of us. Take away our magic and you take away our purpose, our..."
"Bollocks?"
He huffed out a laugh.
"Yes, I suppose. I am physically weak. I am emotionally stunted."
"Christ almighty, we don't need to get too personal."
"I am socially inept. All I have is my magic. If that magic fails, a shifter, even one in human form, could rip me in half."
"Some of them would rip you in half even with your magic. They might be half dead before they finish the job, but by God, they would finish it."
"Yes, that's what I'm gathering. Mages have reason to be scared. A well-functioning pack led by a competent Alpha would be a serious threat to my kind. They stand together, whereas mages stay solo. Even the Mages Guild, which is supposed to be an association of our peers..."
He huffed and shook his head.
Each one of them are in it for themselves. They aren't working as a unit. They are strategizing against each other, supporting each other only when it is clear they'll get something out of it. They make deals that will help themselves under the guise of helping mages everywhere. The rest of us might work with other mages on things, but it's out of necessity, and the sum total is equal to its parts. With shifters, the sum total of a pack is greater than its parts. Do you see what I mean?
And here I thought you weren't chatty.
He wiggled in his chair a little, the only time he'd really moved since sitting down, other than bending forward and looking aloof.
You say this town is in chaos. This is a normal magical town to me. The strong prey on the weak. The weak get out of the way. Law and order is present to some degree, but only when the powers that be feel like keeping the peace.
Well, if you hang around, you'll see what a well-functioning town looks like. Austin Steele will sort it all out.
He was quiet for a moment.
You've heard of Momar?
She squinted, trying to place that name.
A powerful mage, yeah? Last I heard, he was organizing his forces to take over the crime world from Elliot Graves.
Your information is outdated. He has mostly taken over the crime world. Elliot Graves has slunk into the shadows. I heard he's doing just enough to get by. His defenses are up, so no one can get to him, but he hasn't been pulling jobs or leading teams. He's a has-been.
Nev couldn't help but give him a funny look. That account didn't match with what Ivy House had seen. Was someone throwing Elliot Graves' name around to push them off the true scent of whoever had been behind the attacks?
No, Momar is mostly in power now,
the mage said.
He is considered the most powerful mage in the world. Not because of his magic. That title still belongs to Elliot Graves, no matter how hollow it is. But because of his holdings, his money, and his magical influence.
What's your point?
He is so powerful that he should fear very little, but he hates shifters, hates them. When he can, he destroys entire packs.
Nev frowned. She'd been hibernating in this small town for far too long. She hadn't heard any of that. Knowledge of the magical world had gotten away from her, probably because she'd been contemplating retirement before Jesse had shown up. If she stuck her head out of this little divot in the ground, she wouldn't recognize the politics of today. That could be a dangerous situation for Jesse. With as much power as she'd inherited, she was part of the magical world, like it or not. Nev needed to amend this gaping hole in her knowledge, become the expert she used to be.
Why is that, then? She asked.
I've always wondered that very thing. What if it's all rooted in fear? Fear of their strength, of their courage and loyalty to each other. It doesn't hurt that Momar's father was killed by one. From what I've read, it sounded like Pappy Dearest got what he deserved. He'd been bleeding the town dry in taxes, forcing the hungry and desperate to rise up against his tyranny. Regardless, Momar would like to rid the world of shifters. But if he kills too many too fast, they will band together. I am starting to understand just how dangerous that would be for him.
The mage went on watching Austin Steele.
So instead, he's been drumming up reasons to attack smaller packs. Still, it's only a matter of time before he develops the resources to go after the larger ones.
And you think this guy will see Austin Steele as a small pack to go after?
I don't know. If the Alpha is as good as you say, now would be the time to act before he gets his feet under him. But who knows of this town? No one. I'd always thought it belonged strictly to Dixon Janes. I was utterly confused by the summons.
It mostly used to. Things are changing quickly now, though.
Yes. One hopes, then, that it becomes powerful before Momar realizes the threat.
Nev looked at her glass without comment. This new crime boss wouldn't just be interested in Austin Steele. Jesse would add to the flavor. Clearly, they needed to keep this area as low profile as possible for as long as possible. Keep their heads down and plod along, building strength quietly. She needed to mention all this to Austin Steele, and also tell him to keep an eye on this new mage. He seemed okay, but he could be influencing them with magic. Until Jesse was up to speed, there was no way to tell. If he was gathering information for someone, they could be in a world of hurt. Especially if his boss was Momar.
I am almost tickled to see how it all turns out.
The mage mumbled as though to himself, ever mindful of Austin Steele.
If I live that long, obviously.
Why wouldn't you?
You've already mentioned killing me, and sounds like I don't have great odds of leaving this town alive.
Nev looked over his plain face, the button nose the only cute thing about him. His messy hair sticking up every which way, his expressionless eyes not the dimmest twinkle within them.
I can't tell if you're joking.
Neither can I. Sometimes it creates problems.
She lifted her eyebrows and turned back to her cider.
You don't have to worry about me,
he said, as though picking up on her uncertainty about him.
Is that right?
My life will be forfeit should my employer find out I'm here. He will assume I'm sharing information. I shouldn't have come.
Then why did you?
He shook his head, small movements, his eyes rooted to Austin Steele.
Pandora wasn't the only one with curiosity. Now I'm worried I'm hooked. So whatever goes on here is safe with me.
We'll see.
Fair enough.
Jessie slowed as she neared the bar, Jasper peeling off to blend in with the side of the building, and Ulrich already stationed at the other end. Nev could feel Jessie's anger, a coil ready to spring. Austin Steele stopped helping people and stepped back, his gaze on the door. Right now, Jessie's anger was on a tight leash, but one wrong word from Austin Steele, one wrong word, and that leash would snap and the fireworks would ignite.
Nev couldn't wait for the show.
Chapter 7 Jasper blended into the building as I approached, and I caught sight of Ulrich at the other end, his blue and pink hair subdued in the shadows. Mr. Tom had stayed home with Jimmy, who had decided to play video games and escape into a reality he understood. He'd done a lot of far-off staring, paired with some adamant head-shaking, but I firmly believed he'd come around. I'd had to. Sasquatch stood outside of the door, his hand at his side and a cigarette trailing smoke between his fingers. He looked up as I approached, and his features pinched into a mask of distaste.
That was my favorite knife, he said.
Then you shouldn't have stuck it in me and stepped away, huh?
I would have taken it back if you hadn't used your magic.
God, you're dumb.
I shook my head, anger pulsing within me. Austin has your knife. Ask him for it. Though how a rusty knife could be your favorite, I do not know.
It wasn't that rusty.
I pushed past him and then stopped, sticking out a finger. His flinch buoyed my mood a little.
You know what? I want you to keep playing that game with me. I'll make sure you get your knife back. If you catch me, fine, stab me. But if you can't, and I catch you instead, I'll be the one stabbing you.
His eyebrows lowered.
You're going to be in a world of hurt. You're terrible at your magic.
I'm terrible at my magic. What, did you throw yourself at the wall earlier? Is that why you whined to Austin about me?
His eyes narrowed. I stared him down, waiting for a rebuttal, but he just turned away, pulling a long drag off his cigarette as he left.
Ha! Point to me.
Sucking in a deep breath, I entered the crowded bar, standing room only. I recognized a few faces, but no one nodded to me as I passed. They seemed almost nervous. Schooling my expression, trying to wipe off any residual anger or frustration, I threaded my way through the crowd. Despite the vibes I was apparently giving out, I wasn't here to talk smack to Austin, and I definitely didn't intend to yell at him in front of all of his customers. I would do that in the privacy of Ivy House property, thank you very much. I was here to see about a mage. The crowd parted as I walked through. Puzzled strangers or wary regulars shifted out of my way, giving me a view of the bar. Austin stood behind it with a wide stance, popping muscles. His hard expression indicated he was preparing for battle. I glanced around, getting the sense that my bad mood wasn't the only trouble brewing. A quick blast of magic helped me find the source. A table at the far back corner of the main room, against the wall that led to the pool room and bathrooms. I couldn't see any faces through the crowd, only a glimpse of a red cotton-clad elbow, but I felt dark energy radiating from the people sitting there, like oil slicking across water. Nev sat in her usual spot, The support beam at her left and a little removed, preventing anyone from sitting too closely on that side. Her fingers curled around her glass, the ice cubes jockeying for position within the fizzy amber liquid. Sebastian twisted in his seat beside her. I thought he'd look at me, but instead, his eyes did loop-de-loops, tracing something through the air. His fingers wiggled in a way that suggested he was doing magic, but I couldn't see or feel it. He was way more experienced than me. More powerful, too.
Hey,
I said softly, stopping behind them, my hand coming to rest on the back of Niev's chair. The bar chatter, which had quieted down when I first walked in, now cut off entirely, as though the room was holding its collective breath.
Did I get here at a bad time?
Jess.
Austin stopped in front of me, his stare beating into me like a palpable pressure. His power pulsed and slammed into me, turning my blood to gravy. His commanding presence, his air of dominance, pressed down on my chest, on my shoulders. It seemed to say, "Submit, or I will make you submit." Like a spark igniting deep within me, anger flowed up and blossomed out, covering me in shivers, shrugging off his imposing power.
You good?
His words were clipped, tone rough. My fingers tightened on Niev's chair. Is that how you greet a friend? His jaw clenched. He didn't move. He just stared me down like I was a stranger causing a ruckus. His silence punched straight through my middle. Anger rushed in to drown out the hurt. Red tinged my vision.
Bros before hoes, is that it?
I asked, my anger blazing brighter and hotter, my pain lodged firmly in my throat.
Don't you know how I'm doing? My block has nothing to do with your side of the link, so aren't you well aware of what I'm feeling?
His flinch was so slight that I almost thought I'd imagined it, but I ripped away the block on the link, and guilt gushed through it. Unlike Mr. Tom and Niev, Austin felt bad for what he'd been doing. He'd known it was wrong. He'd known he was violating my trust. My eyes stung and my magic ballooned around me, my control wobbling, my heart aching and my rage compensating.
Why did you never tell me?
I asked the dead silent room. I wrapped a bubble of silence around us, letting the walls shimmer so he knew what it was. How could you let me continue believing I was giving us both privacy when you knew it was completely one-sided? The new guys listened in to my private time, Austin? I said with a tightening throat, the embarrassment almost choking me. I tried to push that aside earlier, but the thought was mortifying. How often? How long? Can you even fathom how embarrassing that is? White-hot rage sparked in his eyes. Oh, no. I held up a finger, power pumping out of me in heady waves, more now than I'd ever felt.
No way. You get to apologize. You get to make it up to me, but you do not get to be angry. Do you understand me, Austin Steele? If you don't listen, I will give you the beating of your life. I'll be the fire that melts your steel into a puddle. Try me and see if I'm lying.
I overheard Mr. Tom, Niev, and Edgar discussing the way they control their link to you,
he said, his voice so rough it sounded like a growl.
I assumed they'd pass that on to Jasper and Ulrich. Those guys should not have access to—
His hands fisted, and the weight of his power threatened to push me to the floor. My limbs started to quiver, my reaction to him entirely primal.
I will ensure that ends immediately.
None of you should have access to that time, least of all you, considering how desperate you've been for distance from me, but you won't do a damn thing. You don't rule me, Austin Steele. You don't control my life. I will ensure that ends immediately. In the meantime...
I stared at him, grappling for a threat of some kind. I'd overshot my tirade and left myself dangling. Go to hell, I finished lamely. And then kept standing there because I had business in the bar. This had to be one of the world's worst standoffs. No wonder my ex had always won our arguments. I was just plain bad at them.
Can I speak to you outside, please?
Austin said, his voice softer, more subdued.
We're making everyone incredibly uncomfortable.
Guilt still pumped through the link. Guilt, discomfort, anger, and regret.
You don't really want to start a fight with me right now,
I warned him.
I don't ever want to start a fight with you, Jacinta. I'd never lift a finger to you outside of training, you know that. You'd pummel me.
Don't be cute.
I tore down my privacy spell. The irony was not lost on me, and nearly staggered into Sebastian, knocked forward by the menace pulsing from the corner of the room.
That's a neat spell you devised,
Sebastian said.
I made it better. Maybe I shouldn't have. It's a little too strong right now.
The spell I'd used to lock Austin and me in a soundproof bubble had also blocked my awareness of the other spell, the one I'd sent to suss out trouble.
You just made Austin Steele look incredibly weak to those who don't know him,
Yev said with a little smile.
Or you.
I'd seen that smile before, usually before Edgar got the brunt of one of her violent practical jokes. Austin's gaze snapped to the corner. He didn't need a spell to feel the danger.
Oh, wow, interesting,
Sebastian said, watching Austin with thinly veiled fascination. He'd realized the same thing.
Get out of the bar, Jess,
Austin growled, putting out his hand to nudge Paul to the side. Donna, the cute 20-something bartender who'd turned into a rat to induct me into the magical world, had already scattered, leaving Austin alone behind the bar.
You want to clear away now, lad?
Nev nudged Sebastian before standing, her full glass clutched in her hand. She didn't leave drinks behind.
They're about to make bags of the bar.
Sebastian rose, his movement surprisingly unhurried, and followed Nev to the side as the menace from the back worked its way forward, one guy at the front, two flanking him, and three more at their backs. People had stepped aside for me earlier, sensing my mood and knowing my power, but now they were tripping over each other in their haste to clear the way for this crew. They poured into the pool room or out of the front door.
Just get out of here,
Austin said, and I felt the command down to my toes. It took everything I had to stay put. No. I stood tall, back to the bar, watching the tide of muscle coming toward us. Those in the back of the group topped Austin's 6'2" frame by a few inches, but their thick bodies were layered over with fat. The man in front was made of iron. Pecs popped under his tight black shirt and robust thighs strained his snug trousers. Those to his sides were shorter and stockier, blocks of muscle with smooth grace. They'd be trouble in a fight. Adrenaline coursed through me, followed by fear. The fear of the woman I'd been rather than the woman I'd become. This was always the way before action. I'd snap out of it. Usually I had Ivy House at my back, but Austin would do just fine in a tight squeeze. If worse came to worst, I knew Niev could change into her second puka form, the horrible little goblin with razor-sharp teeth. That thing loved tight spaces.
You have a pretty little territory here, Austin.
His use of Austin's name rather than his title was an insult, a challenge.
Thanks for setting it up for me. Bit early to move in.
Austin put a hand onto the bar and launched himself over it, sticking the landing right next to me.
He took a step forward before reaching back, his hand connecting with my hip and then tucking me in behind him.
I wrapped my hand around his arm and pushed, but it didn't budge. Luckily, I didn't need to be face to face with these guys to work my magic.
I've barely mapped everything out,
Austin said. The guy to the leader's right, a guy whose buzz cut drew attention to his pinhead, smirked at me as I peered out from behind Austin's broad back.
Looks like he's got a maid all picked out for you too, Alpha,
Pinhead said.
Pretty, but you'd better bet her quick if you want airs.
Austin moved so fast that I jumped. With a vicious growl, he grabbed Pinhead by the shirt, and in a show of savage aggression that had the guys in the back widening their eyes, he slammed his fist into Pinhead's face 3 times in quick succession before lifting him and throwing him into the wide-eyed guys. The leader barely had time to flinch before Austin was on him, one hand at his throat, the other at his nuts. He squeezed, and a strangled, high-pitched shriek barely made it past the guy's lips. Austin used him as a club, swinging and hitting the last man standing, knocking him toward the bar. Another step forward, and Austin threw the leader against the wall so hard that the entire building shook. He was on him again a moment later, pummeling him with a fist before lifting him, swinging him, and throwing him out through the door. The three guys pushed Pinhead off and struggled to their feet. Too late. Austin was like a tornado of rage and power and destruction,
touching down on them before hurling them out through the door, one after the other. The guy that had staggered into the bar tried to crawl out, desperate to get away, but Austin delivered a few more strikes before evacuating him. Pinhead was left cowering on the ground, a dark stain down the insides of his pants.
"Please, Alpha!"
He lifted his hands over his head.
"Please, Alpha!"
Austin stalked toward him like a wild thing, savage and untamed. Blistering rage burned in his eyes, and a killer's grace sang in every movement. The predator had sighted his prey.
"You dare disrespect her?"
His voice was not his own, fueled by the darkness within him. Austin grabbed Pinhead by the throat and held him above the ground, his feet dangling. I felt my eyes widen and my heart pound. I'd seen Austin on the warpath, but never like this, not in human form anyway.
"You dare come into my territory, my bar, and disrespect someone as pure and good as Jacinta?"
He squeezed. The man kicked, his face turning red. He grabbed at Austin's hand, his wrist, and tried to push at his face. His strength was draining.
"Say you're sorry."
Austin seethed. Pinhead's mouth worked, but no sound came forth. Austin shook him as if he were a mouse, not a shifter made of solid muscle. The shifter's slight to me had been enough to completely derail Austin's control. What Pinhead had said had pushed Austin into his dark place, creating an opening for the beast to emerge. Austin had allowed himself to get too close to me, and hearing someone belittle me had sent him into a tailspin. It had brought one of his greatest fears roaring to life. He had lost himself. I had to set him to rights. If I didn't, he might never forgive himself for the loss of control. He'd think all of his years of penance had been for nothing. I shoved a few spectators out of the way and slammed the door shut, locking it. Like a shepherd, I herded everyone who remained inside, Nev and Sebastian included, into the pool room. Once they were safely tucked away, I sectioned them off with the spell Sebastian had devised earlier that day. They would not see or hear us. I worked quickly, knowing Pinhead's time was running out. "Enough, Austin," I said softly, walking closer with slow, even steps. I didn't want to startle him. "You've made your point." I dropped my hand to his shoulder, my breath hitching when Austin shook the man again. "It's time to stop this now. Let it go." Radiating calming emotions through our magical link, I rubbed up the center of his back and then reached around and put my other palm over his chest, the beat of his heart filtering through me until it almost beat in time with mine, until I felt our connection in my center. "That's enough, Austin, please." I slid my palm up his chest and cupped his chin, ever so gently pulling his face toward mine. I threaded a little command into my tone, just enough to get through to him. "Look at me, Austin." His arm dropped a little. His fingers relaxed, but not enough. Pinhead slowly stilled, just about out of air, his legs barely kicking now. "Look at me," I whispered, applying a little more pressure to Austin's chin, turning his head. His eyes, dazed with violence, lost to his primal side, weren't focusing. "Come back to me. Remember the meadow with all the flowers? Remember that perfect day with the sun and the wine? Remember how sublime it was? How peaceful? I need you to return to that headspace. Come back to me, Austin." His eyebrows dipped, and I took my hand from his chin and ran it down his outstretched arm, the one that was choking Pinhead. "You've made your point. You're worrying me. Let's let him go." By the time my hand reached his arm relaxed, dropping, letting go. The man fell away, a puddle of flesh and bone, gasping through a tight, bruised throat. But he was alive. He'd heal, he'd live, and if he were smart, he'd never show his face in these parts again. As Austin's eyes cleared, blinking down at me, I acted quickly, using my magic to rip open the door, fling Pinhead out, and slam it shut again. Putting my hand back on Austin's chin, I ran the other over his shoulders and down to the base of his neck. His arms came around me then, pulling me to him. He dipped his head and his lips claimed mine, possessive, insistent. His tongue ran along my bottom lip, demanding admission. Surprised, I opened to him,
feeling his tongue plunge in before sweeping through, striking up a deep rhythm that stole my breath and made my heart thunder in my chest. I tightened my arms around his neck, rewarded with a deep masculine growl, his kiss deepening, his hands splaying across my back. The world turned sideways, and all other thoughts fled as I fell into the feel of him, hard against my body. His taste overwhelmed me, spicy yet sweet, and I melted against him, utterly lost. I'd forgotten how good this felt, how unbelievably he kissed, claiming all of my focus and stealing my breath. Too soon he pulled back, gently biting my bottom lip, hot and passionate one moment, sultry and sanguine the next. I ached to find out if he was as good within the sheets as he was with his lips.
"Sorry,"
he murmured.
"For all of that, for this, for everything. I didn't know how to tell you about the link. At first I didn't intend to use it, but you'd been kidnapped under my watch and I was terrified of it happening again. I'm trying to give you as much privacy as I can. I don't know how to muffle it automatically, so whenever it feels like you need your space, I push the link away. I ignore it. Please believe that. This isn't about me spying on you."
"But why didn't you mention it? I would have understood." He shook his head.
"Embarrassment at first. I'd made such a big deal about Ivy House, and here I was sticking my hand in the cookie jar. But after that..."
He took a deep breath.
"Someone suggested to me that it would be dangerous for you to know. That you might figure out a way to cut yourself off from us if you found yourself in a sticky situation, which you would. We both know it. You'd worry more about us than whatever was happening to you."
I grimaced. That someone was likely Niev, given she'd said the same thing. They weren't totally wrong, although I'd evolved in my thinking. He traced his thumb along my bottom lip.
"I will accept your wrath. I deserve it."
He kissed me again. So incredibly open in his physical intimacy at the moment, which he would have usually shut down by now. What should I expect from what just happened? I pulled my hands down his chest, realizing I didn't want to pull back. I didn't want to step away. Keeping my distance from him for the last month and a half had been excruciating. Just work and no play made this former Jane a very dull girl. I was going crazy with only the Ivy House staff to hang out with. That way lay insanity. I'd end up asking to be retired like Edgar always did. Shadows passed over Austin's eyes, but before he could answer, I said, "I want you back. I want our friendship back. I've missed you. I want you hanging around again, and I want to help you with your territory, if you'll let me." His gaze was deep.
"What can you expect from what just happened? Nothing. Once they challenged me, their lives were in my hands, every last one of them. I could have killed them without remorse."
I frowned at him. "No, I meant, will you freak out that you got lost to your dark side?" The shadows returned again, and he looked at me for a long moment, as if debating.
"Yep,"
he finally said.
"And you are the only soul who will hear that truth. I trust you won't pass it on."
"Okay, well... how do I help with that?" His smile was soft.
"You already did. You pulled me out of it. I can't remember a single person besides my little niece who has ever been able to do that. You are a remarkable woman. But I'll need to think on what happened and why. I have to make sure it doesn't happen again, or I'll need to step down as Alpha. These people deserve more than someone who loses control."
I nodded slowly, basking in his heat. Seeing the cool logic return to his eyes, he took a step back.
"As for our friendship, I've missed you too."
He shrugged, a smile flitting across his lips.
"Maybe we're just friends who kiss from time to time. It happens."
I released a breath I hadn't known I was holding. "Yeah, it's worked for us so far."
"Thank you for pulling me back,"
he said seriously.
"For knowing when and how."
"You've had my back enough. The least I could do was return the favor." I turned and headed to the bar. I needed a drink after all of that. "Ivy House took your side, by the way, when I was mad."
"Oh, yeah?"
He pulled out the seat Sebastian had been using so I could sit down. It was my regular seat. Sebastian would have to understand. Surprisingly, Austin took the one next to it. Yeah. She says she really needs you, which apparently means you can get away with almost anything. I mean, she said I should beat the crap out of you, but that I need to forgive you in the end.
That's a comfort. Do you want to let everyone back in?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Are you... I nodded at the chair.
Taking the rest of the night off. I need to catch up with an old friend. I might even get to slip in a smile or two. After what I did to that guy with a terrible haircut and all his friends, I'll get a few days leeway before someone else acts the fool.
It was clear he hadn't processed everything. He was trying not to think about what had happened, but I knew he'd turn a corner at some point and find himself in that dark place. The best thing I could do for him now was stay by his side and help make that transition as easy as possible. Because honestly, that had been crazy. I'd never seen Austin react like that, like some kind of movie villain. And yet, I hadn't been afraid for one moment, not for myself and not for the people tucked into the other room. I'd only worried about the man hanging from his vice grip. No, that wasn't quite true. I'd mostly been worried about Austin and how far into the shadows he'd charged. I had caused him to do that. I had to own that. He'd only lost control when the conversation had turned to me. I'd caused it, and I would help fix it. Niev was the first to stomp back into the room, her glass empty and her expression closed down in irritation.
What took this? Stop playing with your food, Austin Steele, or do it someone else. I'm choking with thirst.
Sebastian drifted in slowly with his hands in his pockets, slightly bowed, his hair still sticking up all over, and his gaze rooted to Austin.
I want to thank you,
he said when he got within range.
I haven't felt proper fear in a very long time. I was a little afraid when I saw all the fierce muscle in the bar just knowing what could happen, but seeing it...
He shook his head, then shivered.
Thank you for reminding me what it's like. He'll fit in with Ivy House, at least,
Austin murmured, turning away as Donna bustled in behind the bar.
What can I get you, Alpha? She chirped, as though nothing had happened.
Everyone else filed in from outside, and I was surprised when there was even less room in the bar than before. I'd expected people to go home in fear or boredom. From the looks of it, they'd called their friends. After Austin ordered around for everyone on the house, I reached in my back pocket and pulled out a bent invitation Mr. Tom had given me a couple of hours before. It had come by courier, apparently. Something I'd totally missed in the midst of my 12th attempt to explain my newfound magic to Jimmy.
Okay, let's get down to business. Two things.
I pointed at Sebastian. Are you up to speed regarding Ivy House and my role there?
Not your role, but Niev did tell me about your introduction to magic,
he answered. Yeah, I don't even really know much about my role. I've been avoiding it. Good call. Okay. So I'd like to beg your help in training, because I need to get ready for this. I straightened the thick, smoky-colored cardstock. For the first time, an interested party isn't planning on attacking. They are instead formally inviting me and my people to a weekend at their estate. Apparently he wants to get to know me.
Form an alliance, maybe?
Niev asked, peering over.
Did he say how he heard of you?
No, no information. Just a meet-and-greet situation. I shrugged. To get to know me, I repeated. It's a chance at a friendship, maybe. Or at least make a connection. Maybe I can get my foot in the door with mages. Sebastian leaned forward, peering over my shoulder at the swirling font.
Domino Kinsella would stab his granny in the back if she had something he wanted.
Chapter 8.
If something goes wrong or his intentions aren't pure, we don't have the numbers or the setup to make that visit.
Austin took his drink off the bar, swirling the brown liquid. The people trying to get to the bar for their free drink gave our group a wide berth, but several of them shot furtive glances at Austin and me.
I have a few guys who can operate well in small spaces, but they won't show well in an affair like that. They have more raw talent than honed skill. Do we know anything about this guy's magic or power level? Mid-level mage, I think.
Sebastian put his hand up and teeter-tottered it back and forth.
I know him only by reputation. He's made it farther.